Elizabeth sat at Tom Carver's kitchen table. He put a mug of coffee in front of her. He said, "Can I show you something?" He went to the other end of the kitchen and came back carrying a photograph of a little boy. He was extremely attractive, with thick hair and clear eyes and a scattering of freckles. "My boy," Tom said. "He's called Rufus. He's 8. "Is he away at school?" "No, he lives with his mother." "Oh," Elizabeth said. "His mother left me," Tom said, "for the deputy head teacher of a secondary school at a place called Sedgebury, in the Midlands." "I'm sorry." "She's a teacher too," Tom said. "They met at a conference. He has 3 children. They were married last week." The telephone rang. "Excuse me," he said, and went to where the telephone hung on the wall. "Hello?" "Hello, darling. No, 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 I've got someone here." "No, a client." "Yes, of course you can. Sunday morning. All well with you? I wish they'd get you a car phone with all that travelling." "Okay, darling. Lovely. See you tomorrow." He put the telephone down. "My daughter." Elizabeth looked up. "Your daughter?" He came back to the table, smiling. "My daughter Dale. I have a daughter of 25 and another son of 28. My first wife died 20 years ago from some virus contracted on holiday in the Greek islands." Elizabeth stood up. Saying what bad luck seems rather inadequate. He looked at her. "But that's all it was. I thought at one point I would simply die of grief. But even at the lowest ebb, I knew there was no one to blame. It was chance." "Did you bring up the children on your own?" "Yes, until 9 years ago when Rufus was on the way and I married Josie." "But your first children were nearly grown up then?" "Nearly. It wasn't easy. In fact, it was awful. Dale and Lucas, Dale particularly, were used to having me to themselves. Look, I'm really very sorry. I never meant to burden you with all this." Elizabeth lifted her coat off the nearby chair back. He took the coat from her and held it out for her. He left his hands on her shoulders for a second after the coat was on. "We haven't talked about the house," he said, "and I would so like to take you out for lunch." "Well," Elizabeth's father said, "all settled?" "No," Elizabeth said, "at least not about the house." "What then?" "I feel a bit shy about it." "Why?" "Because I've learned a lot about Tom Carver in a short space of time." "Why," Duncan said, taking his reading glasses off, "should that make you feel shy?" "I'm not used to people telling me things about themselves unless they want to show off to me, and he didn't. He seemed to, well, to want me to know." "Ah," Duncan said, "don't sound so knowing." "Wasn't so much knowing as light dawning." When he got home, Tom Carver went down to the basement. It was furnished with immense drawing boards. He moved to the nearest one and thought of Elizabeth kneeling on the floor at Lansbury Crescent looking at the drawings. They'd had lunch in a wine bar, and he thought how nice it would be if they were going to eat together again that evening. He thought that perhaps he would ring her at her father's flat and suggest lunch tomorrow before she caught the train back to London. Then he remembered he couldn't. Dale was coming tomorrow. Dale had had a bad time recently, being ditched by that boy and everything. He wouldn't, he thought, tell Dale about Elizabeth. Becky wondered if, at only 15, the cold could kill you, lying rigid with cold as she was now, with all her clothes on in bed in her mother's house that was so cold itself it felt damp. If there'd been a heater in the room, which there wasn't, even Becky would have hesitated to turn it on because of that awful scene downstairs 2 hours ago, when Rory had said he was still hungry and Nadine, in a screaming rage, had emptied what was in her purse over Rory's head, shrieking all the time that he could eat that because it was all there was until his bloody father got round to remembering his responsibilities. Rory had sat there, ashen, with pennies and 20-pence pieces sliding down his leather jacket and off his jeaned legs to the floor. He hadn't tried to pick the money up. None of them had. They'd simply stayed where they were, frozen, not looking at each other, not looking at Nadine. 200 quid a week, Nadine yelled. How am I supposed to live on that? How am I supposed to look after you? Claire drew her booted feet up under the flimsy folds of her orange skirt. Dad had told them that there was enough money to pay the rent on Mum's cottage, and that he would buy their clothes and stuff for school. But Mum said that nothing Dad said was true. Nothing. She said Dad was a liar. She also said Dad was a number of other things, not all of which Claire had entirely understood. But shivering in this cold, cluttered kitchen, with Nadine yelling and Rory looking as if he might throw up at any minute, Claire understood very well that whether her father was a liar or not, his absence meant suffering. Once Nadine had started yelling, she didn't seem able to stop. She yelled about Josie and about Matthew and about how they, her children, should never have been so disloyal as to go to their wedding. It had seemed to go on for hours. And then, as suddenly as it began, it stopped. And Nadine was hugging them and digging in the cupboard to produce triumphantly a box of sachets of drinking chocolate powder, which only needed boiling water and not milk, which had run out anyway. When they'd drunk the chocolate, Nadine said they should go to bed. Becky had protested, pointing out that it was only 9:30, and Nadine had asked, with that alarming edge to her voice again, what Becky proposed to do at 9:30 at night in a dump in the middle of nowhere, where even the television had given up the ghost, and who could bloody blame it? Becky had clumped upstairs wordlessly behind Claire. She thought of asking Claire to get into bed with her for warmth, but she could tell from the way Claire's shoulders were hunched that Claire would say no, to punish her. Because after an episode like that downstairs, you just had to punish someone for everything being so awful. They'd gone into their bedrooms equally silent, Claire and Becky into the one they shared, and Rory into the crooked space under the cottage eaves, which he'd chosen in preference to sleeping in the third bedroom, which Nadine had made into a kind of studio, full of paintbrushes and jars, and half-made sculptures of wire netting and papier-mâché. Rory had made himself a sort of tent under the eaves, a nest of old duvets and sleeping bags. You could only get in by crawling. Becky watched him crawl in and knew that he would, as she would, sleep just as he was, in all his clothes, even his boots. Becky hadn't heard Nadine come upstairs yet. There'd been some banging about half an hour ago or so, as if Nadine was performing her version of putting the house to bed, but since then there'd been silence. Becky sat up. It was hopeless. She was colder than she'd been when she came upstairs. She'd go downstairs and see if she could find something, somewhere, to make a fire with. There was a line of light still under the kitchen door. Becky put her hand on the kitchen door handle and turned it cautiously. Mum? Nadine was sitting at the kitchen table, wrapped in an old rug. She was sitting with her head in her hands and she was crying. Mum? Slowly Nadine looked up. Her face was wretched, drowned.
I thought you'd be asleep.
I couldn't. I'm so cold. Nadine said, it's awful, isn't it? I've never been so cold either. Becky came further into the room. Do you want some tea? Nadine said, there isn't any milk. You could have it black.
Thank you, Nadine said.
Becky ran water into the kettle. It was a grotty kettle, choked with lime. Heaven knows where it had come from.
I'm sorry, Nadine said. It's just...
Becky waited.
It's just I get so angry because I'm so powerless. This horrible cottage.
Becky turned off the tap.
You chose it, she said.
I did not, Nadine shrieked. It was the only one we could afford.
Becky closed her eyes for a moment. She shouldn't have answered back. No matter that she and Nadine and Rory and Claire had driven round Herefordshire for what seemed like weeks looking at cottages for rent, with Nadine saying no, no, no to everyone, even the decent ones with proper bathrooms and bus stops nearby. And then at last, when they pulled up in dismay in front of this utterly doomed place which looked like the witch's house in a fairy tale, there were even mushrooms growing on the roof, miles from anywhere, she said, yes.
Do you hear me? Nadine said now.
Yes, Becky said.
It's true. This is the cheapest. And the cheapest is what we have to have. You know why.
Becky thought of the car, which Nadine had also spent a long time in finding, with its rust patches and holy floor. It was frightening to think that something so fragile was her only link back to the outside world. She put the mug of tea in front of Nadine.
Could you get a job?
How? Nadine said. With no one to get all of you to school and back but me?
They'd been in their new schools for 2 terms, ever since it became plain that Matthew really did mean to marry Josie, and Nadine had decided that it was intolerable for her and the children to stay in Sedgbury. Matthew had wanted her to stay, so the children at least had the continuity of school and friends and grandparents. But she had refused. She'd been in such violent pain that she'd believed passionately that the only way she could assuage it was by getting away from everything that was familiar. The children had complained bitterly. More than they complained now, she thought. But she had told them it had to be. Becky tried not to remember all the cottages they'd seen on bus routes.
Could you get a part-time job while we're at school?
Shop girl? Nadine inquired sweetly.
Maybe, I don't know. I wouldn't mind a Saturday job in a shop.
You're too young. Anyway, how would you get there?
Becky shrugged.
Bike, maybe? And where will you get a bike?
Becky opened her mouth to say, I'll ask Dad, and closed it again, too late.
From your father, no doubt, Nadine said. Your honeymooning father with his nice new house to come home to.
Becky was suddenly very tired.
I wish... What do you wish?
I wish you didn't hate him like this. We've got to go on seeing him.
Nadine's light blue eyes were wide with fervour.
Exactly. Exactly. And can't you just use 1 ounce of imagination and see how agonising that is for me to bear?